this was a momentous occasion this morning when the word got out. This is it.
Yep. It's time.
Yeah.
So April of next year, my term will end and there'll be a new mayor.
Yep. Are you going to Disney World then?
No. No, Linda and I right now are just planning a small trip out to Maine because neither of us have ever been to Maine.
Oh, wonderful. That's on my bucket list too.
So we decided we're going to do that.
Know why they call it the Granite State?
I'm assuming because there's a lot of granite in the state.
Okay.
That's it, Frank? You don't have some antidote about that like you do with Texas or something?
I could have said it's a granite state because they have a lot of jade. I mean,
I just wonder if they have any gold out there. You're not going to revert to your young days, your young college days when you would go gold prospecting.
No, that's a little more difficult to do nowadays at my age. I don't know that my back would put up with it, but I am.
But there was a time in your life was it with your brother?
Yep.
You went out west, right?
Yep, we went gold mining in California on the North Fork and the North Fork of the American River in Tahoe National Forest in Donner Pass.
What was the story about the photograph? You told us a great story about that.
Well, there's a photograph of my brother and I, and I'm not going to give away the whole story because I am writing a book. And everyone always says, oh, writing a book on politics? No, I'm writing a book on gold mining. So there's a story in which my brother and I are on the mine, and we're working, and I used to work 15 to 30 feet underwater with a dredge. And so we're doing that. And so I literally was in really good shape in those days.
You're right. I don't envision you doing that anymore.
No, 30 feet underwater is more than I want to do nowadays.
Wait, let him tell the story.
So okay. Basically,
I got so much to do in so little time, but go ahead. All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So basically the story goes is that my brother and I finished for the year and we're starting to head home. We had a picture taken of the two of us with my hair down to my shoulders, full beard. Same with him. Get this picture, all muscle, because we literally just spent 4 months in the mountains. And so we sent the picture to my sister, Anna, who lived in New York. And she was doing off-Broadway theater at the time. And so the story goes, and again, I'm not going to mention names at this point in time, that she has a party at her house, a cast party. And that cast party, an actress who was in the play comes to her house and at that time was not well known. Mm-hmm. But later on became a very famous actress. Mm-hmm. And again, here's the story. My sister seems to have amnesia now, which is one of the problems that we have. She said she was looking through this actress was looking through her photos and saw my brother and I and said, I want this one. And now, my sister told me she pointed to me. My brother seems to think that my sister told him he pointed to her. And so we have had this constant fight on who did this actress really point to. And so when I do finish the book or get that chapter done, I intend to send it to that actress and say, which one of us did you pick? And I'm going to find out if the story's true.
And then you're going to reveal who the actress was.
So do you think
the now famous actress.
Right, as long as she will, it's like me.
Do you think Barbara Streisand will remember?
I will have you know it is it's one of those fun ones. It's going to be it'll be a lot of fun.
Tell us who it sounds like? What it sounds like? Right, initials?
No.
Nothing,
no.
Huh?
It'll be in the book when I'm done with it.
All right.
And Frank, New Hampshire is the Granite State.
Oh.
Whoops.
Well, what is Maine known for? Wait a minute. We just had Tim Carter on and he didn't come up with that for his state. He lives in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
We just had him on the other day.
Maine's known for Stephen King. It's a Stephen King state.
Okay. All right. So what about Wisconsin?
Well, let's move on.
It was cheese, but maybe it'll be John Antaramian.
No.
Yeah. Well, it depends if you do something really scandalous.
Thank you very much. So I'm looking to retire, not become scandalous.
All right. So we go back in time, 1983.
Yep.
You were 28 or 29.
27.
27. And you embarked on a career in politics, okay? Started out as state representative. And I looked this up. You represented the 23rd and the 65th district at different times.
Right.
So did you move or?
No, the 23rd basically used to be 60th Street. Or was it the 65th was the first one? I'm trying to remember which one was which. I think it was 65th was first. and it was the south side of 60th Street and most of Pleasant Prairie was the assembly district in those days. They changed when they did redistricting, they changed the numbers, which I believe then went to the 23rd. And at that point in time, 60th Street minus Allendale and not all of Pleasant Prairie. The western part of Pleasant Prairie was removed.
Okay.
So I just had the eastern part.
And where did you live back then?
Basically, I lived over by Tremper.
Okay.
And actually, I lived since 82. I think it was 82. Yeah, it was 82 when I we bought our 81 when I bought the house.
All right. So did you ever imagine back then that you would go down the path that you did?
No. Actually, it's always intrigued me in the sense that if someone had asked me would I have gone into politics, I probably would have told them no. I never was one of those involved in high school or anything else in any kind of politics in any way. I'm one of those situations where it just struck me one time, and I ran against Gene Dorff in 1980, and I lost by 196 votes, but who's counting? I ran again against Ron Frederick, who I had a campaign against, and I won that election in 1982.
And you mentioned it struck you at one point in time. Was there a catalyst? Was there
an issue that got me upset, and so I ran. Now, the crazy part about it, if you ask me what that issue is today, I couldn't tell you.
Really?
So did you do a post-mortem on those 196 votes? Did you kind of like...
Which time?
Okay. You know, you replay it in your head. Okay, if I had only done this or that...
Now, the only consolation, I suppose, in that loss was that I really didn't know what I was doing when I ran, because it was the first campaign I ever ran. Mm-hmm. And the people who were helping me were all our friends. None of them had been in campaigns, so we just kind of went off onto our own on how we did things. I believe I hit every door that election in the city of Kenosha. So I did every door instead of targeting, I hit every door. So
instead of targeting just
active voters.
The core voters. Right. Okay.
Was that your naivete?
That's my naivete.
Yes. And then at that point, were you still in the management position at Walgreens?
Yes.
So you were juggling that and your...
I was working at Walgreens in 80 when I ran the first time. And then in 82 when I ran again, I worked until June, and then I left my job in June and just went full-time campaigning.
So when you were working at Walgreens, okay, I think you were the assistant manager. Was Bill Carnegie there?
Bill Carnegie.
Yeah. You know what?
He was wonderful.
Yeah,
he
truly... I know. Was. Wasn't he?
He was a wonderful man.
Yes, he was.
I should say was, because he's still around.
Oh, is he?
Oh, yeah. I saw him not that long ago.
And that store, for whatever the reason, has not had that many managers. Well, I know over the years, they would always put their strongest candidate into that store.
Is the Walgreens on 80th Street?
Yes.
Yeah, you might want to let other people know.
Okay. Yeah. Well, is there any other Walgreens besides 80th Street?
That store, at one time, I believe, had the highest growth rate of any place in the country with the number of prescriptions that they were filling.
Right.
It was just huge.
Over 1,000 prescriptions a day.
It was huge.
It was unbelievable.
And I can remember when I started, I think we were doing on a Sunday, a good Sunday, we did 65.
Wow. Wow. And now, I don't know if this is true or not, but I had heard that Kenosha area sells a disproportionate number of allergy and asthma-related medication.
Where did you get that information?
I'm trying to remember where I
heard
that.
Well, you should be.
That I couldn't tell you. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I like I said, it's just hearsay. I don't know that for a fact. But.
All right. So what was it? Mid-80s, you became the 48th mayor of Kenosha, right?
92. I served 10 years in the legislature, 82 to 92.
Okay.
Is there a reason that the term served is used both in politics and in prison?
Well, good one, Ken.
There might be a correlation.
How's that going to refuse to answer on the grounds of incriminating me? My goodness.
Okay, so
just curious.
Okay, we go back to the early 90s. What was the motivation? What were any factors that led to your decision to run for mayor?
Oh, yeah, that's actually a much easier one. I discovered, I served 10 years in the legislature, and I was very fortunate.
Much easier? It's only our second question.
but that one, what ended up happening is after 10 years, I looked at... I had a young family.
Mm-hmm.
Though I enjoyed the legislature, I found I wasn't enjoying it as much, and I think part of that was because I had a young family and I was constantly gone. And when you're on finance, you're gone a lot. And so, from my perspective, I had reached one of the areas that I wanted to get to, which was budget writing, which was going to dealing with being in finance on the finance committee, but that also consumed huge amounts of time. So I'd be going on a Monday, coming back on a Friday. So even though the legislature was only in session on Tuesdays and Thursdays, literally I was there all week long. And so, you know, I reached a point of is this where I want to go? This is what I want to do. And so I actually, it was kind of one of those, I'll call a little bit of luck, when Pat Moran decided he didn't want to run for mayor again. And at that point in time, I decided, you know what? This is perfect.
Yeah, the planets align.
And I've got some managerial experience. I think I can do this, and I have some ideas of where
and
I want to go.
Finance experience.
And so when the opportunity came, I took it, ran for mayor, and was fortunate to win the first time around. And then was fortunate that the public was willing to give me the opportunity to serve for 16 years in a row.
What was your relationship with Mayor? Former Mayor Moran,
right?
Did he come in and help you with the transition?
No, not really.
Any parting advice?
All mayors will do the same thing. Just like when I left last time and Keith won, I basically told him, and I would assume all mayors do this to the new mayor coming in. If there's something you want from me, I'm here to help you. Otherwise, the office is open. You've won. You know, it's 2 weeks before you take over. Come on in. We'll do transition in the building. We can get you to, you know, you can use then the office to meet with people, you know, start getting yourself together so that when you do get here, you can hit the ground running and at least have a better feel for what's going on. And all mayors do that. I don't know that I've ever known a mayor that has been unwilling to do that. Now, in Pat Moran's case, you have to remember Pat left early. So you had Dennis Wade, who actually was the interim mayor.
Oh, that's right. I completely forgot about that.
So it was a little bit of a different situation for me in that first time when I came in. Mm-hmm. But all mayors do that. I mean, they literally will give time and work with whoever comes in, you know, so that they have an opportunity to get a feel for things and to know what's going on.
All right. For the benefit of our many listeners who didn't call Kenosha home in the previous century, that really sounds like a long time ago, doesn't it? Could you share with us what was the state of the city when you assumed the role as mayor?
Oh, in 1992, we were in the midst of a contraction of employment. You had the Chrysler situation that had been going on. You basically the Lakefront plant had been closed. 5,000 jobs had been lost. You had Anaconda Brass that had been downsizing for years and continuing to downsize. You had McWhite Steel Rope that was downsizing and eventually closing, also just like Anaconda Brass. You had Frost Company. You had all the foundries that eventually closed down. All of that was happening in the hitting its zenith in the sense of in the late 80s and early 90s.
So we really had massive contraction
going
on.
So when I was elected, one of the biggest issues we had was, what are we going to do about economic development? And so one of the things we started with is I started building industrial parks. And those were the first things we did. And with the industrial park, you had the deal that was done with the Wiss Park and with Pleasant Prairie. And, you know, not to rehash old arguments, I still think that that should all have been in the city, but that's just my opinion, and I'm sure Pleasant Prairie will disagree with me. But it is what it is. That deal was cut. Pleasant Prairie ended up with Wiss Park. However, Wiss Park was good to work with. When the city started doing our industrial parks, you know, Wiss Park and the city were able to get together and talk through how we would do some things so that smaller companies would come to the city's industrial park and larger businesses would go to Wiss Park. Now, that a lot of people, why would you do that? Well, the goal with smaller companies is they actually do long-term better growth, number one. And secondly, we only had a finite amount of land, where Wiss Park had a massive amount of land.
So right. And this would be just off of 52nd Street,
right.
West
right off
of Green Bay Road.
Yeah. So that's the deal we cut, and they helped market the land on that basis. So because they were helping me market it, we were always able to make sure everything was covered. We had enough growth in there to make sure that we covered our debt. It was a good deal for everyone. And so Wiss Park and the city did well together in being able to get those parks started. And so once the first park got underway, we filled it. We did the second park, and that one we didn't need Wispark for because we were now capable of supporting ourselves and doing things, and so we did. So we continued to grow the industrial parks in the city. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we started the downtown plan.
Mr. Mayor, unfortunately, we do have to get this break in. So hold that thought. Part 2, Chapter
50 WLIP.
We are back, and we want to welcome you. This is Happenings Q&A. Frank and Kim Carmichael, Rihanna Stockdale, Tom Corsa. We're working from the Miller Lite Studios. Our guest in this hour is Kenosha Mayor John Antaramian. Kind of sounds a little different now, wouldn't you say, Rihanna?
Just a little.
Yes, because he made the announcement today. It's official. This is his last term in office. And before we delve into this, I want to thank you, John, for your many, many years of service. And where you have taken us from the point when you took office for the very first day to where we are now. And when we left off, we were discussing where the state of Kenosha was right back then. I mean, manufacturing was leaving our city, and you were instrumental in the creation of industrial parks, and you were also just touching on where we were with our downtown.
Right. At the time, you probably remember it, there were only a couple of stores in the downtown that were even functional back in 92.
Yeah, Mike Bjorn had one of them. Yes.
And then there were a couple of law offices and a couple of other things, but basically you had a lot of empty space in the downtown area. So you also had, in 88, the city made a decision, and it's a bold decision. You got to give them credit. They decided to build a marina, and they did that. And so when I got elected, I had a couple of things I had to deal with. One is I had a marina that had a huge cost to it that was continually building every year because there was no revenue coming in to cover it. And we had the site next to the marina, which is where Harbor Park is now, that was basically filled with rubble that you could stand in the middle of it and you couldn't see the lake. And that's how bad that was, and it had cyclone fence around it.
Right, it was a vast wasteland. It was.
So that's what one of the things they had. You had a nice little marina with about 40 slips in it, I think, and this area next to it that was vacant. Now, initially, the initial plan from the previous administration was to put housing at Wolfenbuttel Park, and that failed. And the council voted against it, didn't happen. And so when I got elected, I now have inherited a... You know, as I said, a community that has a lot of needs in the industrial side, which we took care of first. And then secondly, in 94, I was able to negotiate a deal to get the property, the Chrysler site. And basically the city went out, and that was one of the first brownfields that we ever did. And it was one of the first in the state that was done. And so we actually helped in a lot of ways of writing the state laws on brownfields, because it was one of the first ones. And you got to give credit to the DNR and to some of the people involved, Darcy Foss, Pam Malata, and a number of others who literally stuck their necks out to help us get those projects so that they could actually be developed, and actually ended up helping to create the laws that now impact all municipalities dealing with brownfields. So I don't mean to bore people on this, but anyway, so we were able to get laws in place so that we could actually develop Harbor Park. And put together a plan, went out and got bids on the project. Had one person who literally believed he could make it work, and that was they got the contract. They came in, they started to develop the Harbor Park. We did a review though of Harbor Park, which brought the public in, dealing with the Urban Land Institute, and there is a gentleman, and this is terrible, I'm going blank on his name at the moment, used to be the mayor of Indiana, and he came in and he was wonderful because he literally helped us outline how we should do things, making sure the public was involved, how to do this. And we followed his plan and it worked like a charm. In the end, the council voted for it, the public came in, had their say on it, and the project moved forward. And that, in the end, basically helped with the downtown and actually stabilizing the downtown, starting to get some restaurants and some other things in, to the point of where we're at today. And now this next step in the downtown plan will enable us to do a great deal more and strengthen the downtown. And I believe you're going to see a robust downtown over the next three, four years. You're going to see some huge opportunities in the downtown for people.
All right. So anybody that looks back would realize that no grass grew beneath your feet during those first 8 years in office. But then you decided not to seek a third term.
No. First 16 years.
16 years.
I decided not to seek a fifth term.
I'm sorry. What went into that decision not to continue? Were you burnt out?
I like everything else that you do, I always think the politicians sometimes, and you know, I don't like to consider myself necessarily a politician, but that's what I am. I'm a mayor. I'm a politician also. And I think sometimes we don't know when to walk away. And I think there's sometimes you just get burned out and you need to leave and allow someone else to come in. And my common joke has always been someone else to come in and kick the tires, fix what I didn't do right, and expand what I did do right. And so I think you have to have that happen at different times. And I reached a time after 16 years in the as mayor, 10 years in the assembly, that I needed to get back to the private sector. I wanted to do something different, and so that's what I did. So it was a decision that I made based on that more than anything else. So it just was one of those times where it was time to go. I came back in 16. Keith had decided not to run again. And the one thing that bothered me as to why I came back is I didn't think we were doing enough for our young people to keep them here. You know, I have two kids. One's here and one's someplace else. The opportunity to keep our young people, I think, was very, very important. And that's what got me moving, coming back, and focusing on the Chrysler site, because that was an opportunity, I think, for creation of something. Wasn't totally sure what it was going to be, but creation of something that would help to keep our young people here. That's what it needed to be focused on. And that's what we've done. We've created the Innovation Center, and I think that's going to be a huge draw on the long run in keeping our young people in Kenosha and giving them opportunities.
Right. If we could back up for just a moment, those 8 years in the private sector, you did some brownfield consulting, did you not? That was one of the areas of expertise.
I did some teaching also.
Right. You were a adjunct professor at Carthage College. How far into that were you getting the itch?
Oh, I don't know that. I think probably, you know, I was involved with the city throughout a good part of that, because the city asked me to help them with the Chrysler site. So I was involved already in what was going on. I think from my perspective, the last couple of years before I ran, I was starting to get a little bit of the itch, only because there are things I was seeing that I would like to see happen. And so once Keith made his decision, it made it a very simple decision to, well, okay, here's where I'd like to go. Let's see if the public is still in the same mindset. And that's the important part.
So if Keith had decided to go to seek another term,
I wouldn't have run.
You wouldn't have run.
No.
When Keith ran for office, did you support him or endorse him?
Actually, I did.
Okay. Yeah. So when you decided to return to public life and you became the mayor of Kenosha again, I mean, when you combine the 16 and the 8, you have to be one of the longest running mayors in the state of Wisconsin, are you not?
I don't know about the state, but of Kenosha. I never pay attention to that kind of a thing.
Okay. All right. So I think you pretty much clarified why you came back. And I'm just wondering, I'm looking at the state of politics today. And it, to me, on the outside looking in, it's dramatically different looking to me than it was when you first came into office. It seems as though we're losing some of our civility. Can you tell me, can you elaborate as to the contrast you see from that first year in office to what next year will be your last?
Well, I think that regrettably in politics and in this country, things go in cycles. Good, bad type of thing, in the sense of how people react to things. And we're in more of a negative aspect of how people perceive things, in the sense of what they think they can say or what they think they have a right to say. And we've lost a lot of civility. Now, I will tell you, there have been other times in history, if we go back far enough, you'll find similar situations. It just takes a long time to get out of these cycles once you get into them. And we're in one of those cycles that I think people are a little too free with what they think a criticism is versus, you know, what is just construction.
Criticism.
What? Yeah, and you're right. Cryptic criticism versus actual criticism of I disagree with you. I think that is something that is going to be problematic in our society. And part of that goes back to the internet and that people feel they can say and do anything that they want. And I'll use the example of, you know, I've had people threaten me and everything else on the internet. You know, a person went to jail not that long ago for something that they did. So those kind of things happen. And again, I don't get too overly upset in the sense of those type of situations only because it's part of the job in the sense you just deal with it. But again, it's that type of attitude of where people think they can say and do whatever they want, and they really can't or shouldn't. There's a certain amount you can do because I'm an elected official.
You're a public figure. You're open game.
I'm open game. But there are some limits, and when people cross those lines, they can get themselves into a lot of trouble.
All right, so listening to you, it sounds like if you go back in history, that history's our teacher, the pendulum swings.
Yes, it does.
What's the impetus? What is it that's going to get that pendulum that starts swinging the other way? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, I think it's individuals. I think that at different times in history, different people have stepped up. And, you know, when that person steps up and leads on a moral basis as to not just politics and getting things done, but also on a strong belief policy in the sense of right and wrong type of thing, that begins the process of swinging the pendulum the other way.
But can that person get elected in this climate?
Eventually. I would hope so anyway. Like everything else, I mean, there's no guarantees. We're a democracy and
well, call me naive, all right, but I would like to think that the silent majority is pretty moderate in their thinking. I'd like to think that there's a fair number of people in this country that kind of see the whole picture, that realize we don't live in a black and white world. It's just that they can't be so silent anymore.
They have to vote.
Yes.
That's the
yes.
issue.
So true.
And until we do that, until we fix what I would call the gerrymandering problems, you can't have a state that votes, let's say, overwhelmingly. I shouldn't say overwhelmingly, but is, let's say, 52% Republican or 52% Democrat, whichever, and then have a legislature that is 75% of the other party. That tells you that there's a definitely gerrymandering issue that you have to address.
But gerrymandering virtually, essentially, guarantees re-election for certain people.
Yes,
you know, and I think that kind of destroys the whole concept of democracy.
And that's my point in the sense that it's hard to get people to go out and vote when they think that their vote doesn't matter.
Right. Well, I mean, case in point, our last congressional race. Okay, Brian Stile wins handily, and I asked 20 people. Who's his opponent? Nobody knew who Ann Rowe was. They didn't even know, couldn't name her. And then it really impacts me that in the democratic process that exists today, that candidate was written off right out of the gate. The DNR, the National Democratic Party. I'm going to get it right eventually. They just look at district by district, which ones are winnable, which ones aren't, and then they just starve it as far as any kind of monetary support. So it just becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
And that's, like I said, why gerrymandering becomes such a problem with what we do.
Yeah.
But again, you know what? In the end, it still falls on us as individuals. You have to go vote. And there's so many people who don't vote.
Well, that's, yeah, in the primaries.
In primaries.
Especially.
And
especially
and
the primaries.
And even in the generals.
I realize, but the primary is where, that's the candidates we have to choose from.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, so. Kenosha Mayor John Antaramian is with us. It's official now. He has made the announcement that this will be his final term. Back to this last 7 years that you've been in office, you were facing big deferred infrastructure needs, eroding shoreline, aging roads, serious flooding in some of the neighborhoods.
Yep.
These were all major projects. Was it ever frustrating that people don't realize, there's so many people don't realize all of the effort that goes into something like this?
It's frustrating in the sense that people don't realize how much money you need to spend to fix these things. And, you know, everyone wants certain things done when they want them done. And certain, you know, so it's a balancing act as a mayor to make sure that I find funds to be able to do things and then fit them into the cubby holes that they have to go into to make the projects work. I mean, the amount of flood damage or flooding control we have put in the last 8 years is
huge. It's massive.
It is massive.
I mean,
but most people don't realize it unless you're one of the people, right? Well, unless you're one of the people who are actually being flooded all the time, you notice it. Other than that, the majority of the public hasn't got a clue. You know, we've built two basins in the last 4 years, and we're in the process of expanding a third basin. We've put in massive pipes on 60th Street, on Pershing Boulevard. We've put in massive pipes over by the Pick and Save, and a new basin over there to relieve the flooding on that area. When we're done this coming year, we will have handled pretty much most of the flooding west of 39th Avenue and part of the flooding east of 39th Avenue. To about 30th Avenue. And you know, right now we're finishing up the Chrysler site. We're hooking into the Wilson neighborhood in the next year. So we'll be taking care of some of the flooding, the rest of the flooding over there. So we will have taken care of a lot of the central city flooding that has been going on for a lot of years. And so those type of things are in place. At the same time, we've been fixing the lakefront because we've had the whole lakefront basically disintegrate. And we're going to do First Avenue this year, which will be the last major piece that we have to do, the city. There's some spots areas that we need to take care of, and I have one large area left, but it looks like we're going to cut a deal with the DNR and transfer some land to them, and in return they're going to take care of that last piece.
And okay, so was that contracted out, most of that work, or is city?
Oh, it's all contracted out.
All of that, including the flood?
Yes, all that is contracted out. We don't have the capability to, I mean, when you're thinking of putting in these pipes, some of these pipes are down huge.
Yeah, the equipment is massive.
That's right. What I thought. So you put that out on a bid to make sure that you got the competent company at the lowest price and all of that stuff.
Yep.
You know how frugal I am. I just like to ask these questions.
I mean, we're very, you know, realistically, we're very tight because there's only so much money.
I like that about you.
There's only so much money I have. I mean, and again, you know, there are people who think we spend too much money on infrastructure or too much money on borrowing. And our borrowing is set up on basically on notes, not bonds. So they're 10-year notes. Most of our debt is eliminated in 10 years, which is not the norm.
It's fairly short term.
And the unfortunate thing, most of the work that you've had to do over the last few years is it's kind of like you're building a house and you've had to spend so much money on this foundation that nobody sees rather than all the pretty glitzy stuff that everybody sees up top.
Well, I'll use the example of 22nd Avenue. I've had people tell me, you know, it can't be all that expensive. How much do you think 22nd Avenue cost us?
No clue. And take a guess.
22nd Avenue? Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with $11 million.
Good guess. Try $100 million.
Wow. What?
Yeah. You're going from 95th Street to 105th. You're going from 95th to 115th? You've got a huge area. You're replacing all the underground infrastructure. You're eliminating any lead pipes that might be in the road. All those things. That's exactly right.
Because
you're building this now with concrete. The last thing you want to do is have to go back in and redig it out. So you do everything at one time. So you're a $100 million project. Now, in all honesty, we probably wouldn't be able to afford that in general. The only reason we're able to is because of the TIF districts that we have in the city that we've done very smartly, that have cash flowed and enable us to transfer some of the funds from the TIF Western End TIFs to the Eastern End TIFs, which enable us to do that so that those costs are not on the property tax bill.
Do we have any TIFs, tax incremental financing?
We have a number
projects
of TIFs
that are on top right now?
Oh, yeah.
Top of mind?
We got a lot of TIFs right now.
Well, and I think that's one of those things that comes under your purview that a lot of people don't think about, knowing all the ins and outs on how to get the money, how to approach the state, how to approach the federal government to funnel those funds where they need to be in our city. And oftentimes you hear about people talking about, oh, so-and-so should run for mayor, or this person who's a popular public figure. But unless you have that background on government, how the government works, it doesn't do a whole lot of good to be the mayor. I mean, I think that's a very important aspect of it.
I think for mayors, the biggest piece for a mayor is having a vision. I really do believe that.
Yeah, but the implementation, the devil's in the details.
You're right. But if you don't have a vision, you're never going to get to the implementation.
Right. It starts with a dream or a vision.
It has to have a vision. Yeah. And then I think whoever the mayor is, if they have a vision, they're going to learn. I mean, if anyone thinks that, you know, I look back at my first term. My first term was not a smooth running first 4 years.
Well, there's a certain amount of learning on the
job.
There's
a huge amount of learning on the job, and it's just the way it works. You know, if people are looking that whoever takes my place is just going to hit the ground running and everything's going to be smooth and easy peasy, they're dreaming. Whoever becomes mayor is going to have to a lot of work. They're going to have to figure out how some of these things are still put together and how he's going to finish off some of the, he or she is going to finish off some of the things they want to do. And what is it that they wish to add themselves? What is their goal to see happen? Because I think that to me is the most important thing that needs to happen. You can say, I'm going to finish off the projects that the last mayor started. That's wonderful. What else are you going to do? Where do you see the city being in 20 years? Not in the next five or six, but in 20 years from now.
You are leaving the next mayor quite a bit of work, though, right?
I mean, that is true.
I know you've got it started, which is awesome, but there is going to be a considerable amount of follow-through on these projects that you've already started.
Yes, there is. And there's going to be a lot of things they're going to have to do.
So it's going to be very important to you, I would imagine,
and to
as
us.
who your successor is going to be. I know you can't predict or have any speculation as of yet, but that is going to be meaningful to you, I would imagine.
Of course, because it's going to be meaningful to me to see what people, and that's why I keep on harping on whoever runs needs to have a vision. What is it you're going to do? Because I think that becomes the most important thing. I mean, you've got John Morrissey, who I believe will be hanging around for a while, who's on operational.
What is your definition of a while?
I never speak for other people. I agree, but I think he'll be there for a while. So
Rihanna, make a note. Let's get John Morrissey back in here.
To assist as much as can be expected of a seamless transition.
Right. Okay. And I think you'll find, I mean, so.
We've already felt him out. He has no desire to run for mayor.
Yes, I know.
I kind of thought he'd be gone when you went.
Well, it's always that possibility, too. I don't want to speak for him as to what he may or may not do.
We can't.
But again, I believe that no matter if John were to decide to leave earlier than later, he's not going to leave the new mayor hanging. He's the new mayor. He'll be there for that new mayor.
No, he's a stand-up guy.
Make sure that
his heart's in the right place.
Right, to make sure that they get off to a good start. But those are all things that just, you know, are part of the process.
Mary Ann Taramian, I don't know what to say. We have so many more questions. We're out of time. But the good news is you're going to be our cover story in the next issue of the Smart Reader. So many of these other questions, hopefully we get answered in that edition.
I'll think about it.
And there is a big difference between the DNR and the DNC.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Okay. John and Taramian, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for your many, many devoted years to our community. We're the much richer for it.
Well, thank you for having me, and I will always tell you, it's been an honor for me to...